There is a scene in John Lee Anderson's most recent letter from Baghdad in the New Yorker magazine that speaks volumes about how people see life in a dictatorship. Saddam Hussein's half-brother has been captured by U.S. forces, and the Iraqi, with whom Anderson is watching television, is ecstatic over the news. What's peculiar is that Anderson's host was a member of Saddam Hussein's Ba'athist Party, in fact, a former official of the Iraqi Foreign Ministry. John Lee Anderson is now in Amman, Jordan, and joins us by phone from there. You write about people who were, broadly speaking, on the inside of this regime, but it seems far enough from power to, at least this year, think of themselves as being outside of it in some way.
It's a fascinating syndrome. I spent the last 2 weeks spending a great part of every day with members of the ancien regime, and the man you mentioned was also a long-term intelligence official and had had a close relationship over 20 years with Saddam's half-brother, who in fact had been his recruiter. And I asked him, you know, why is it that you're ecstatic about his arrest? There was a kind of anger that welled up in him, I think, which had to do with his own humiliation for having been subjugated to this man. And I said, but you served him. And he said, because I was terrified. And that, I think, was the perverse beauty of Saddam's dictatorship, was that he was able to tyrannize his population and, moreover, make his victims and the relatives of his victims his accomplices.
But this man you're talking about, Samir Khayri, he himself said he did not murder people or kill people, but his superior did?
You know, he never admitted to having killed anyone, and he wasn't the kind of man who would be committing executions himself. But he was nonetheless compromised by the regime and worked with it.
The man whom you write most about in this article, Dr. Ala Bashir, is a plastic surgeon, a painter, a sculptor, educated in Britain, I guess, really probably could have been a surgeon any place, or a sculptor for that matter, was favored by Saddam Hussein to some degree. How did he rationalize his relationship with a man whom he seemed to recognize was a brutal dictator?
Again, it's a paradox that he hasn't quite reconciled. He really found it difficult to come to terms with the fact that he had, in my view, undergone moral compromise. He somehow saw himself as a doctor and an artist, that he was not involved in politics and merely spoke about art or allowed Saddam to buy his art or praise his art, and on the other hand, to serve him as a man of science, as a doctor, as a plastic surgeon, and that this somehow didn't compromise him. But I think deep down, there was some kind of kinship, and it's in that kind of unreconciled bridge between his contempt and fear and hatred of the man he served on one hand, and his feelings of somehow of admiration. Therein lies the portrait of the man I tried to render. In other words, because I think this is indicative of a great many people in Iraq.
Do you come away from your conversations with these members of the ancien regime, as you say, with the sense that they were at all in the dark about what was going on, or were they fully familiar with the campaigns of brutality that were being alleged and that now perhaps will be documented?
Oh, no, they were fully familiar with it. Ala Bashir told me that he visited the front line during the Iran-Iraq War several times with Saddam Hussein, and during the war he became one of the chief practitioners of reconstructive surgery on a number of men who had been grievously wounded or disfigured at the front. He took it upon himself, he said, to brief a number of these men, many of whom had deep psychological traumas. He became very interested in them. He told me the story that he had destroyed all those files because he had discovered that there was a common vein running through many of their testimonies, which was that many of them had suffered from chemical warfare that the regime itself had fired into the battlefield, not caring whether or not its own men suffered or died from it. And he accumulated such an amount of evidence of this that he felt it was dangerous and destroyed it. In the case of his friend Samir Khayri, just I think it was Thursday, I was speculating aloud with him as we watched images of people looking for disappeared relatives. And I threw out a kind of wild figure at him. I said, so how many people do you think Saddam executed? 500,000? Knowing that this was a little exaggerated. And he said, no, that's too much. 100,000. 150,000 people, for sure. My point in that anecdote is that this was a man who, until the fall of Saddam, was serving at a mid to senior level in government for many years, and yet nonetheless retains in his mind a wholesome integrity as a man who wanted to be a lawyer and who is a jovial host and loves his family and never personally, to my knowledge, harmed anyone, yet nonetheless was forced into this creepy, unholy intimacy with people who did.
John Lee Anderson, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me. It was my pleasure.
John Lee Anderson is the author most recently of the article Saddam's Ear in the May 5th issue of The New Yorker. He spoke to us from Amman, Jordan.